This is Art Musings with Love from Oxford, a podcast where we natter with local artists, learn about their process, their work, and delve deep into their creative, emotional, and business challenges. Basically, the juicy bits, the dark underbelly of being an artist. I'm Carol Terrio, a painter focused on watercolor and inks.
And I'm Sally Ann Stewart, a lino cut printmaker who loves depicting the beautiful city we live in. We're kicking off our art careers and hoping to learn a few tips and tricks from those around us. And we thought you might like to join us. Allons-y.
Allons-y.
Today on Art Musings, Carol and I will be chatting with Esther Lafferty. While Esther is not an artist herself, she's incredibly important to the Oxfordshire art community. Esther runs Oxfordshire Art Weeks, a local organisation that throws an annual behemoth of an event that invites anyone in Oxfordshire to show and even sell their art by opening their studios to the public. Both Carol and I are big fans of Art Weeks, and today we get to talk to the head honcho about what it's like to run such an organisation.
And our focus topic will be, how the heck does an artist describe themselves and their work? I personally find this super difficult. Like, just last week, I had to get my application in to the Oxford Art Society to be considered as a member. And obviously, I'm very much hoping that I will get in, but I overthought what I was writing. It was the first time I did it. I'm very much hoping that today with Esther, I can get a few tips and tricks. Because while I get it conceptually, I definitely have anxieties about making noise and boring or bugging people or sounding pretentious.
Yeah, it's definitely a really tricky one. I've also submitted my Oxford Art Society application.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I went the other way and wrote too little, because my tendency usually in life is to hugely overthink things and go too far, you know, trying to get everything perfect. So I thought, right, I'm just going to shove it out there and hope for the best. But now I'm thinking, oh God, why I didn't say enough, should have said more. It's just horrible. So we're really hoping Esther can help us today.
Of course she will. Shall we get her on the show and put her to work?
Yes. Esther, thank you for coming on Art Musings. It's fantastic to have you here.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Esther, thank you so much. Now, when we interview artists and people connected with the arts on the show, we invite them to point to their socials or a website where people can learn more. If someone wanted to learn about Oxfordshire Art Weeks, where would they go?
The website is www.artweeks.org. And the best place for socials to look for us is on Instagram, where we are simply Oxfordshire Art Weeks. All the same on Facebook.
Brilliant.
Okay, let's go back to the start, Esther. Are you Oxfordshire born and bred? Because I'm thinking I can detect an accent that's not Oxfordshire there.
Yes, I'm Northern originally, though I've been in Oxfordshire since I came down to Oxford when I was 18. So I feel like an Oxfordshire person. And if I'm speaking to someone and they ask me where's home, I would say Oxfordshire now.
And whereabouts in the north were you from?
Just south of Manchester.
And you came down for university?
I did. I was at Queen's College.
My husband was at Queen's College as well, actually. It's a small world in Oxford.
Now, Esther, you spend much of the year surrounded by creativity. Would you describe yourself as a creative person?
I don't think I ever would have done when I was growing up. I seem to have friends who could create wonderful things, brooches or paint pictures out of nothing. And my efforts always seem to be stick men or things that Blue Peter wouldn't have put on screen. So I never thought I was creative at all. And actually, I've got artists in my family. My granddad was a very good artist, and my uncle and aunt. So I felt a little bit of a black sheep on the art front. So it's interesting that I'm now involved in the arts, which I love. I love the, you know, I think it's a privilege to be involved in the arts in Oxfordshire. Mm. But I think my creative talent, as much as I have one, probably people would say it lies with my pen, because I do writing.
I think it's an interesting way of thinking about it as well, because a lot of people who may not be artistically inclined themselves can still be involved in the community, right? There's loads of different roles out there for people.
For me, anyway, we're dealing with so many different types of art and craft and things that people might not automatically consider art. I think having a broad mindset and not being focused myself on liner cuts or on ceramics or something particular probably helped me have that wider view.
Carole, should we talk about a bit about our Art Week's experiences and our meetings with Esther?
Yes. Do you want me to go first or do you want to go first?
You go first.
I don't know if you remember this, Esther, but so I think what is de rigueur is when someone new joins Oxfordshire Art Weeks, you pop by and have a visit to check out the show, see if everything looks good and everything's on point.
I do try to, though we have a lot of new venues every year. So I don't, unfortunately, manage to get round all of them. But I do, I think, certainly get round the majority of them. And it's really important for me to do that because Art Weeks is very much about community. We're very much about accessibility. We want to welcome everybody in because we're not an exclusive club. We're inclusive. So I want people to feel welcomed and to feel that we are friendly and helpful and that they can ask anything. I think that's one of our strengths, is that we are this kind of open, friendly community of artists.
You definitely are, because on my first one, you were my first visitor. Like, I think we opened at 9 and you were there at 9:05. It was the first time I'd ever done it. And you made me feel really at home. And you kind of said, look, I think you can go for Oxfordshire, you know, Art Society as well in a few years. I think you've got this. And you really encouraged me. And I thought it was amazing.
Thank you.
Well, I had a slightly different experience with Esther, which was that a few people, it was my first time doing Art Weeks, and got a little garden room at the end of the garden where I have my studio, and there were quite a few people in there. There's not much room to swing a cat, and I think there maybe were 4 or 5 people in there, and Esther came along, and I sort of saw her. I did know her face from the helpful videos and things that you put out ahead of Art Weeks to help newbies, and I just sort of shrieked, "It's Esther from Art Weeks!" And everybody kind of looked.
You are famous.
I do get that greeting often, that, "Oh, it's you," seems to be the thing I hear the most over those whole 3 weeks. When I was first doing Art Weeks, which is about, I think 12 or 13 years ago now, if not pre-social media, it was not as prevalent then, and we weren't doing the video workshops that we do now. So I could be much more of a secret shopper, though not that I'd ever want to be a secret shopper particularly, but it wasn't quite as, yeah, here I am, because I don't go out at all to sort of judge and check up on things. I'm going out really to meet people and see what they're up to. It's really not more complicated than that. But it's, yes, I can't sneak in and sneak out quickly anywhere anymore.
No, you have to start coming in disguise. Well, I'm just glad I'm not the only person that's embarrassed myself in that way. Could you, Esther, for people who are not in Oxfordshire or not even in the UK, could you describe Oxfordshire Art Weeks for them?
Yes, of course. Oxfordshire Art Weeks is a 3-week festival of open studios and pop-up exhibitions. The original idea was very much that it would be open studios, but increasingly people can't or don't feel comfortable opening their spaces, their art spaces. And so that's why it's now many pop-up exhibitions in all sorts of places, some of which are fascinating, completely aside from the art. So we have lots of churches, there might be village halls, pubs, schools. And there are also, as well as people who are hoping to sell their work, we have people who are simply passionate about sharing what they do. So they might be trying to show people their process, or it might be an opportunity for perhaps a community group or a charity to showcase what they've done over the year. So there's many, many different reasons why people take part. And they just for a week of those 3 weeks, probably because we have 3 different geographical areas. So probably for 1 week, they open their doors and they welcome people in for free to come and look at art, chat about art. And it's art in the broadest sense. So it's art, it's craft. It might be wearable art. We have jewellery. It might be furniture, fashion, even sort of eco buildings. We've had all sorts of things. And there's nothing that doesn't really fall under the umbrella of Oxfordshire Art Weeks.
What if someone had art that was maybe not family friendly? Is that frowned upon or is that okay as far as Oxfordshire Art Weeks is concerned?
We've never been in a position where work is entirely unfamily friendly. I think we would flag it up in the festival guide if there was something that was recommended not for children. I can think of one particular artist who has some rather risky pieces of work, And we did have a problem with the website because it was then flagged up as over 18s only because of this.
Are you just seeing what you can get away with next year?
And because of the nudes, we have the nudes, of course, which is not unexpected in an art environment. But we have occasionally had an issue with certain images on social media or whatever. As a general rule, it's not an issue, really. There's no reason why we couldn't include things that were provocative. But we'd have to be careful that we just package them so nobody got a nasty shot.
Of course.
We're not terribly risque folk in Oxfordshire. Quite gentle. Has it been getting bigger every year, Esther? How many people does the festival have now entering every year?
We usually have about 900 members. So there are 900 people exhibiting. I think there's a perception that it's been getting bigger. It's edged bigger over the last 10 years rather than kind of taken great leaps and bounds larger. And I think the perception is partly because the way people choose to present themselves has changed a little bit. Whereas people used to be very happy to clump themselves in a group, the professional artists within those groups have realized that if they're going to develop their name and their branding, they actually need to be listed, for example, in the festival guide. They need to step up and say, this is me and this is a piece of my work. And that needs to be in the pages. So now some groups, instead of saying, here we are this art group from this place, they now say, here we are six artists, and each is listed under their own name. So I think that has given a perception that we're growing. But we're certainly very healthy and we're growing slightly, but it's not nothing, there's no huge trend for growth.
And I know you ask the artists for their feedback every year after the festival, but what kind of feedback do you get from the public? Because from my experience, people absolutely love it and are so engaged with it. It just seems to have a really great reputation as an event.
Yes, I think that's true. I think it's because the people who go to the events are the people who want to have a look what's there. They want to find out about art. And one of the charms of Art Weeks is that it is a bit of a surprise. You never quite know what you're going to get when you walk down that garden path or whether you walk through the doors of that church. So there's an element of surprise in there and there's an element of luck. Whether it's something that really grabs you or you might go to a big exhibition, but actually it's not quite your thing. So I think there is that element of finding nuggets of absolute treasure, often in the middle of nowhere. You could be, go drive through a beautiful country lane to a little Cotswold village you've never been to before, and there you discover something that you just can't leave behind. And for the rest of your life, it's, living on the middle of your dining room table. Or equally, you can go somewhere that's, maybe a little bit, got a more of a gritty reputation, and you go into a garage exhibition, and then you're wowed because they've transformed it into, you're transported into Africa in that moment because they've got the Hessian and they've got giraffe statues, and you just, it can take you to places you don't expect as well in a conceptual sense as well. So I think it's those surprises that people love, as well as just seeing beautiful things.
It's so true. You're making me think that people who are considering their summer holidays next year in May should really think about, taking part and going around, because what a great way to see the countryside and to see our county, by being able to go into houses and see art.
Yeah, absolutely. And lots of people do visit Oxfordshire while Art Weeks is on. So I'm not going to pretend that there are tens of thousands of people rushing to Oxfordshire just because Art Weeks is on, but they're certainly timing their visit coincide with Art Weeks. That's a very common thing that we see.
As an artist receiving people, it was really amazing. I think my first year I had 40 people, and last year I had over 100 in the times I was open. And I would make a cake every day, and we would sit in the back and have tea and cake, and people would be looking around at the art, and they would be from the neighborhood. They'd be people just driving by and happening to see the sign in the front. People that had planned their visit, and through, because we have this gorgeous booklet that you guys produce and it has little maps to show you where everyone is. And some people came in and, just bought original art, and I'd never met them. They just loved it and bought it. And I also had one person who walked in and immediately just went, whoa, this is not my thing, and dashed out.
There are as many types of visitors as there are types of artists.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting to see their reactions. And yet sometimes people who sidle in quietly and just do kind of what you think is sort of flicky eyes, where they're not quite, that you don't think they're quite comfortable, and yet they'll come back with the husband or wife and buy something later. And there are other people who come and settle in and eat cake and chat for hours.
Yeah.
And actually sometimes they're more interested in the chat and the cake. You know, it's a
well, who isn't? I mean,
it's hard to not be distracted by cake.
Esther, how did you end up running Oxfordshire Art Weeks?
That's one of those long stories, an example of someone's life where they would, if they had tried to map out 100 possible journeys, it would have never appeared on that list. I started out in medical publishing. I then had several small children where I couldn't do the travelling involved. So I was organising local events, actually sort of theatre and story-based. And then I got involved with the Story Museum before they were a building in Oxford. And I organised Alice's Day, which is a multi-venue event in Oxford Centre in July. And from there, I was dealing with a lot of the big organisations. And somebody mentioned to me that Art Weeks, you know, the festival director for Art Weeks was a vacant position, and they thought it would be perfect for me. And I thought, I don't really know anything about art. I like it. I've been to Art Weeks events, but is this right for me? But actually, it's been a perfect fit, because the combination of being confident to publish the festival guide, which is a pretty mammoth task, and I'm very organised. I love a spreadsheet with multicoloured columns. And you need that. Artists are mostly like mad frogs hopping slippery in all different directions. So you really need a good spreadsheet. Keep that under control. So actually,
I'd be thinking we must be the worst kind of cats to try and herd. Trying to herd 900 artistic cats. You must have, I mean, I guess you're used to it, but it would give me nightmares.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. I love it.
I bet, I know I'm a nightmare because I never answer emails. I'm the worst, and I'm sure there are others like me. So how do you deal with people that are, I don't know, on the, I think it's because of nerves a bit. You sit on the sidelines and you're expecting there's a bunch of people that know what they're doing, and you don't want to get in the way and mess anything up.
That's really interesting. Because one of the things I would say to every member of Art Weeks is, please, if I'm asking for something, please send it, because you're in the thick of it with everybody else. And I have probably a kind of 100 people who respond every month with everything I've asked for. And that's great. But I know them so much better. And I don't just want to know them. I want to know everybody, because people are missing opportunities. And that's a shame for them. And, it's a shame for the Art Weeks enthusiasts, the visitors and things, because the publicity is, I can only use what I'm given by artists. So if I'm not given anything much, then it's very hard for me to help push them as well. I mean, I'm always pushing the festival as a whole. Within that, I'm looking for people's stories, what people are telling me or telling people when they visit about themselves. And if I don't have that from someone, then we can't be as helpful as we'd like to be.
I think that's a really fair point. Yeah.
And probably brings us to our focus topic for today.
Yes, our focus topic. So how do we artists describe ourselves and our work? When we first start being artists, I tripped over myself even calling myself an artist. In fact, Sally, remember just even a month ago, you and I were out for coffee and we were talking with some other people about how it feels really odd calling yourself an artist.
Yeah.
It sounds pretentious somehow. So
yeah.
Esther, tell us, how do we get over ourselves and do this stuff?
I think probably the key to beginning to describe yourself as an artist, or being comfortable with describing yourself, is being comfortable describing what you do. Because if you know what you do is art and you can describe it in a few sentences, then you can say, I'm an artist and I do this. I think people get very... That's where they struggle. People struggle with describing themselves simply because they feel they need to have this artist statement that could hang on a gallery wall, where they're talking about I don't know, deep conceptual things and where they're referencing this and juxtaposing it with that. And actually, I would say cut all of that out and start very, very simply and then build. So the very simple thing is think about what do you do? And that's whether you're painting or whether you're making ceramics or you're doing lino. And why? Why do you do what you do? Is it because if you're working with clay, do you like that sort of physicality and the slimy hands and the, because you've made an active choice to work with clay and not to work with silver. Or if you're a painter, then you've made an active choice to work with watercolors because they're more translucent, or you know, or you're working with oils, which is a slow, laborious process. So I think it's about thinking very, very carefully, but in sentence, sort of short sentences that anybody could understand. What do you do? And when we're talking about paintings, my first thing would be, what is the content of the paintings? Not what are they made with? Because there's a bit of a difference there. If I said to someone, tell me about the play you're putting on, and they said, oh, well, I'm going to host it here, and I've got four actors, and we're going to get costumes borrowed from the next door village, and it'll be on over four nights. And I'd be saying, yes, but what's it about? So the first thing is, what is your work about? Is it about you wanting to create beautiful things for the table? Is it about things that catch your eye when you're out and about? And if it is about those things that catch your eye when you're out and about, why are those things catching your eye and not the other things? So it can be really, really simple. But if you've got those three lines perhaps of description about what you do, then you're saying, I'm an artist and I do this, and you're comfortable with it.
Mm-hmm. I love the idea because, I don't know, maybe it's because I'm a self-taught artist and I haven't been, you know, academically trained. I think I overthink the idea of an artist statement because I suspect there's some kind of secret sauce to one that I, you know, that I'm not.
Or some secret society of people who know how to write them.
Yeah.
There's also, a real span of art and craft that people, and some people make things because they like the look of them and they like the process of making. And other people are making things to communicate a concept. Mm-hmm. And there is a disparity there. And both are art. So I think the idea, if you go to Modern Art Oxford, you'll find this big backstory about somebody's past, the society, the cultural aspects, the philosophy. But a lot of people don't have, and that's absolutely fine. It's about saying, I paint the coast because the coast makes me feel happy. And I would like people looking at these pictures, paintings, to feel those same emotions that I feel. And that's a single sentence.
It's so interesting. I was recently at the Tate Modern and I was walking around, you know, and they've had basically most of the same art up for the last few years, I think, outside the, you know, the specific exhibition galleries. And it's all very dark and conceptual and worthy and immediate, like expressing a problem. And yet there's all these kids everywhere, right? There's these kids everywhere having a day out learning about art. And I worry that it doesn't show the joy of art or the beauty of art as well as the important messages it can convey about the world.
I completely know what you mean. And I think a lot of that is to do with funding and funding structures and the way that you, if you are going to get support from one body or another, you often have to have a message. And some artists, that suits them perfectly and that's how they work. But not everybody does. Lots of people, it is about the joy. And that doesn't appear so much in those kinds of gallery spaces. Maybe more in the commercial gallery spaces you would find that, just that simple joyousness of portraying what you see or your emotions or creating shapes and forms that inspire you or other people to have those emotions. And Artwix does encompass all, but we have a big middle ground of people who produce things because they enjoy making them and they like the look of them.
Esther, if somebody is feeling anxious about showing their work. Have you got any tips to them, the sort of first steps for getting out there and showing their stuff to the world?
Showing their stuff to the world, I think it's you've just got to do it. I would probably recommend joining a group show, because that's a very straightforward way of dipping your toe in the water. That said, I've got a number of artists I can think of who's, you know, their first exhibition, there's a solo exhibition at home, and they, well, in fact, both of you. And it's a brave step, but it's a much stronger statement. It's a much stronger way of putting yourself out there and genuinely seeing what people think. Because in a group exhibition where there might be five, there might be 20 other artists, what you're getting is lots of people coming by, but they're not coming to see you. They're coming to see a selection of interesting or pretty or whatever. Whereas if you put yourself in the festival guide, for example, or have an exhibition, it doesn't have to be during Art Week, so that's just an easy vehicle to use. And then people come. They've come because they've seen a picture on your flyer, or they've seen something about you that made them want to come and see you. And I think that's very, you don't need many people to come for you to be reassured that, if you like, the real public, not just your family and friends, are coming and looking.
I think probably Carole and I are quite fortunate, because while I think this is true about both of us, neither of us particularly like being in the spotlight, we are very sociable characters who love bit of tea, bit of cake, bit of chat. So that, I mean, that probably helps us. I don't know what you think, Carole, but probably helps us get over that of kind of saying, come and see my stuff, it's so wonderful, I'm so great, which is,
and we both had jobs, previous jobs in communications as well, so that gives us a leg up, I think, on this side. But some people who are amazing artists are petrified of people, or they get anxious around a lot of people, can't imagine having, you know, how to handle that. What advice would you have for them?
I think either taking part within a group, or there are actually a smallish proportion of people who hold exhibitions without being there. So sometimes it's somebody's garage and they set their work up, but they're not there. And you just go in and you browse quietly, or in a pub or in a cafe and those kinds of environments. Now, that's not quite, you're not getting the most out of Art Weeks if you do that, because the visiting public generally quite like to meet the artist and chat, because then they're carrying away with them, if they choose something to take away with them, they're not just carrying away a physical piece, they're carrying away a kind of a memory, an experience, a story of how they found this, I don't know, this lovely house in this nice little village or whatever, and they've met the person and they saw how she was making something else. But you can have an exhibition and not be there, and that's quite a popular approach. I mean, some people do it because they can't be there, because they've got work commitments or whatever. Sometimes as well, people pair up, because often it's easier to sell somebody else's work than your own. So if you've got two people and somebody is standing and they're browsing, looking at something, and the person who didn't make it says, oh, isn't that lovely? Yeah, I love that one. It's really tactile. It reminds me of this. It's much easier to do that about things you like that aren't yours, because you don't feel like you're being a pushy salesman. And most artists aren't pushy salespeople.
No. Okay. And Esther, I just wanted to ask you a few more things about the artistic statement. So someone has to write an artistic statement for the very first time. Do you have any more tips or advice to help them get their head around it?
I think when people are looking to describe themselves, a very easy way to do it is perhaps sit with a friend or someone who's supportive of you, and come up with some adjectives. They don't need to be complicated. It could be that you use warm colours. It could be that you use colours. It could be that you like big, you think big. It could be that you're very dainty and delicate what you create. You think that's so obvious because, well, you look at your work and it's obviously small, it's obviously functional, or it's obviously realistic or impressionistic or whatever. But those adjectives are what set your work apart from somebody else's work who might live in the next door street. They're also an artist. They also paint in watercolor. They also are potters. But their pottery will be different from yours. And it's by those adjectives that make the difference. So if you're thinking about writing what you do or saying what you do, don't be shy of using those adjectives. And I'm not talking adjectives like wonderful, because, well, hopefully you and your supportive friends think, but just sort of descriptive adjectives. It's elegant, or it's robust. And it's so you're placing your art within this kind of field of everything else that's created. But if somebody saw yours, what is it about yours that makes it different from all those others? And for some people, that's much easier than others. But I think that's a really good place to start, though, is just what adjectives would describe your work.
It's so interesting. There's this, I remember this thing when I used to work in corporations. There was this thing called the elevator message, right? And it'd be like, how do you describe yourself during this elevator journey up to the eighth floor? And the idea is that you have to be very tight and you have to be very descriptive. Do you feel that's something that could apply here?
Absolutely. So I would always be thinking, think festival guide, you're talking one sentence, talking 10 words, you're talking 12 words. It could be paintings, mostly figurative, often inspired by women. That doesn't actually count out anything, because you can have a picture of the sea, you could have anything, but you're just saying often inspired by, mostly of. So it's kind of what's the core of your practice, or it could be local landscapes, joyful summer scenes. It's about the core. So I think you kind of need a one sentence. This is what I do. I'm an artist. I do this. One sentence. You probably need a sort of 50 word or 100 word, just a paragraph that it expands it a little bit. And then if you've got those and you're happy with those, that's everything that I need for me for the beginning of publicity. But more generally, it's probably what you should be putting on your website. That's what you should be putting on your Art Week's artist portfolio. And then if you want to expand that further, this year I have a collection where I have been inspired by my holiday to Spain, or the colours of something, or the emotions I felt on this journey, then that's sort of the second paragraph. But I think actually thinking of it just like that, that kind of elevator pitch, is a really good way to do it.
I wish we'd spoken before I put my application in.
I'm sure it'll be fine. I think the other thing that people have in their armory when they're describing themselves as an artist in a written sense or a printed sense is obviously your imagery. And it's easier probably for people who are creating wall art, because you can take a really good photo of a piece of art that's representative of you. I think the value of getting good photos or taking good photos, thinking about how to stage a photo for 3D art, shouldn't be underestimated. It's really important. Because that actually is a really eye-catching thing. If you can get an image that's right, and then underneath it or alongside it on a flyer or on your website, instead of just saying Potter, it says Potter inspired by the pigments of the local landscape, or just something that just pinpoints you a little bit, or animals, the natural world, just something that is your key. And I think those images are really important too. And for the festival guide for Art Weeks, but for any flyer, anything you do, those images are what catch people's eye and pull them in.
I mean, it makes really good sense when you're saying it, and I don't know why I got myself in such a tizzy. You're basically saying, what are your key words that describe your work? And show us a visual that underpins what you've said. Is that fair?
Yeah.
That helps my brain.
What's your favorite picture that you've produced? Your favorite picture or the photo of your favorite piece over the last 6 months, year, what do you do? So it's also describe that piece and it's broader, the broader collection. And if you're finding it too hard, you're probably thinking too hard.
I think that's such a great idea, though, Esther, what you said about sitting down with friend, family, whoever, and getting them to describe your work and finding those adjectives, because when you do it yourself, it can feel so self-aggrandizing, even if they're only simple describing words and, you know, not things like wonderful or, you know, world-beating. You know, it still, to me, feels, you know, it's got that kind of ick factor of talking about yourself. And I don't know about you, Carole, but with, you know, having worked in communications, you know, I was always really happy talking about other people because you never had to say anything about yourself if you know, you were telling the world about other people's work. So, but turning that spotlight onto yourself can feel very uncomfortable.
100%.
I think it's like a dating site. There's that dating site that I think is called something like datemybestfriend.com or...
Mysinglefriend.com. Yeah.
People write about their friend because their friend's hopeless at it.
Yes.
And I think it's the same.
So we need myartistfriend.com.
Myartistfriend.com. There you go. In your afternoon, the podcast in the morning, myartistfriend.com in the afternoon.
Ooh, yeah. TM that.
The winning idea.
Are you comfortable, Esther, with having a listen to Carole's statement that she put to OAS?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, I'll share it with you.
I'm a very written person, though, so I probably, generally I would write rather than hear. But go on, I can
read it now. Come on.
I think I used the word juxtapose as well. I opened with, I sketch and paint daily, producing around 50 works a year that I choose to share with the world on my website. That was the first paragraph. That's probably, you would say, why did you start with that?
Yep, go on. I hope you're going to say in your next sentence what you paint and draw.
I hope so too. I say my medium of preference is watercolor, though I also work in ink, gouache on occasion. All these mediums are activated by water, and it's water's interaction with pigments and the cotton paper that excites me. Oh, I did, and I find this a fascinating juxtaposition.
Oh dear.
I need to attend Esther's class.
Nothing wrong with juxtaposition. It's probably just it's one of the words, isn't it? That
I know. I go into the water and the medium being, you know, like it's so familiar to us, but it also, its behavior is, I find it baffling. And then I went in about how I like to tell stories in my work. So I have like three paragraphs. It's too much.
Let's hear that bit.
I'm a storyteller, so no surprise that my art strives towards a strong storyline rather than using my voice or words. In my works on paper, I play with composition, distort proportions, and tweak perspectives to help tell a snippet of a story, letting the viewer fathom the rest.
I really like that.
Do you?
What I'm not hearing is anything about what's actually in the paintings. And I'll tell you why that always is the thing that I ask first, is because people will drive across Oxfordshire, go and see pictures of the Lake District because they love the Lake District. Nobody drives across Oxfordshire to see a juxtaposition of watercolours and oil.
Yes.
Nobody drives across Oxfordshire to see an interesting process that inspires, well, there might be the occasional person, but people do go and see pictures of dogs, elegant tableware. They go and see things that where there's, in their head, they've been able to build a tangible picture in their head. So that's what I mean. So it could be mostly figurative, often women. It could be, it's more about just, it's a bit like that thing with the book, or, you know, describing the book. It's 250 pages. It's in 15 chapters, and it's got a nice cover. And I'm saying, yes, but what's the story? What's the story? And so that for me is the gap. All the rest of the stuff is cool, it's good. It's all what makes you and why you do what you do. So it's all important. But I think you're missing, and everybody does it, and it baffles me, but everybody does it. It's like describing the toothpaste box and the toothpaste tube without saying, but this has got toothpaste in.
Yeah, you know, I think my last paragraph, I have to now share it, because I think that is actually all I needed to put in, literally. And I think based on what I'm hearing, right? So my last paragraph in this three-paragraph thing was, but my true art muse is the natural world, perhaps growing up in a forest near a river in Canada played a part. What I do know is I want to capture my memories of the wood, the river, the lake, the wildlife, our seasons. And maybe it is important to tell these stories, what with our gorgeous planet environmental crisis.
For me, that's paragraph one.
Exactly. I understand.
It's the content. And then once you know what content is, it's like going to a literary festival. You don't go to the literary festival to hear the author talk if you haven't read if you don't know what the story is, or you haven't read the book. So you see the work, or you envisage the work, and then you hear the why, the what, the how.
Brilliant advice.
Or unpick a theatre show. You see the show. This is what the show's about. And then you unpick the way they, or the film, the way they filmed it, the way they So that's how I would.
Yeah.
That's how I would think about it.
I think this has been amazingly useful for me. Thank you so much for sharing that and doing that. Esther Lafferty, the head of Oxfordshire Art Weeks, thank you a million times over for coming on Art Musings.
My pleasure.
Perhaps we could just share one more time where people can learn about Oxfordshire Art Weeks.
The place to go is www.artweeks.org. And for artists, there's a section on the website called For Artists, and that's where all the information about taking part can be found. To see lots of the art, then the best place is probably Instagram, where we post almost daily, and it's a very wide variety of art, and that's just simply at Oxfordshire Arts.
Fabulous.
Thank you so much, Esther.
Great to come on.
Thank you for listening to Art Musings. If you like what you hear, you can subscribe wherever you heard this podcast. You can join us on Instagram at Art Musings Podcast or on our website, artmusings.co.uk. And this is where you can find all the links that were mentioned in this episode, bio information on our guest, links to Sally's art website, links to mine, and of course, links to all the socials. Again, thanks for being here. It means the world.